Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and I'm happy to announce Jim Garrity of National Review is back today. Yesterday, schools were closed in Fairfax County because it was cold. Today, just a delay because it was slightly less cold, right, Jim?
Yeah. By the way, the forecast is to have relatively warm weather for January over the next 2 weeks. My understanding is that Fairfax County Public Schools don't want to risk it, and we'll reopen in May. There's really only like a 3 or 4 degree window they can have class or they can have school around here. Other than that, you know, oh, it's too hot, got to close it again. So,
all right, on to the good martini today, and it fits in very well with what the Republican majorities in Congress are focusing on early on here in the 114th Congress. This from the Associated Press. Nebraska's highest court tossed a lawsuit Friday challenging a proposed route for the Keystone XL oil pipeline, saying the landowners who sued did not have legal standing to do so. In a split decision, the court ruled that the three landowners who sued the state failed to show they had legal standing to bring their case. Four judges on the 7-judge court agreed that they did have legal standing, but because the case raised a constitutional question, a supermajority of 5 judges was needed. So, Jim, the president's big excuses were, we've got to talk about the environmental impact of this pipeline. This case seems to take care of that. He said the State Department has to review this. They've given the green light. It would appear that the president's run out of excuses here, although I'm sure he'll still oppose it for some reason.
Well, if you go back to that end-of-the-year statement, but before we go any further, I should point out, it's now every state has fully approved the project.
Yes.
There's no longer the, oh, the states, you know, we got to wait on the state stuff. Every state has signed off on it now. The statement of the president was, well, yeah, it'll create some jobs, but those jobs are only temporary, as opposed to all the other infrastructure jobs that are permanent. you may have noticed, Greg, that when they build a road, people continue building that road forever. When they repair a bridge, that project goes on forever. Actually, it may seem like that. No, but so the president somehow seems to believe that only pipeline project jobs are temporary, but all of this, you know, we need to repair our infrastructure and start fixing roads and bridges. Those jobs, he insists, are all permanent. And then the other thing was, of course, carbon emissions. And of course, he's really concerned about the increase in carbon emissions from shipping oil through the pipeline. Never mind that if you don't ship it through the pipeline, you have to ship it on trucks or by train and ship it over by boat all the way over to China. And oh, by the way, all that process emits carbon. And oh, by the way, hey, Greg, when you build a bridge or you fix a bridge, you dredge a port, you do all this other infrastructure projects that Obama has spent 6 years touting, doesn't that, what's the term I'm looking for here, emit carbon?
Probably.
You know, yes, you know, everything you do emits carbon other than dying. So at that point, you begin returning carbon. And so I'm kind of, you know, all the president's excuses are there. What he really just needs to come out and say is like, look, I'm a green environmentalist extremist, and I don't like this project, and I don't like the gas prices are low. I want energy costs to be high, so I'm not going to do it. And if he did that, at least he'd be honest. But instead, I'm sure he's going to say, look, you know, Jupiter is rising and is retrograde against Saturn. And under those circumstances, I can't approve a project like this. Or he'll just come out and say more directly, well, Republicans want it, so I won't give it to them.
On to the bad martini now. And let's stay on the energy front. And you have to say, it's probably been a pretty good first week here in the 114th Congress for the Republican majorities. They're focusing on Keystone, legislation to encourage the hiring of more veterans. That's obviously good. They're chiseling away, or at least they're trying to, at the definition of the work week and Obamacare, all things that are relatively popular. Jim, but elsewhere on the energy front, Republicans are giving us a little bit of a head scratcher here. What's it been, about 2, maybe 3 months since gas prices started to drop? And already, folks up on the Hill, including Republicans, say they're open to a gas tax hike, even though they're not willing to call it a gas tax hike. Everything is on the table, says Jim Inhofe, very conservative member, chairman now of the Environment and Public Works Committee. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. Mr. Inhofe didn't say he supports raising the gas tax, and he refutes referring to it as such. It's not a tax, he said. It's a user fee. The chairman of the Finance Committee, Orrin Hatch, saying, yeah, it's not a tax. It's a user fee. So, Jim, this sounds like the semantic game that we were hearing around the penalty for not buying health insurance. And just when we finally got some affordable gas prices, it looks like Congress is after us again.
Yeah. First of all, it's really disappointing to see a guy like Inhofe do this whole, oh, it's not a tax, it's a fee. When Obama does that stuff, well, I kind of am used to that. But guy who's got, some super duper ACU rating, come on, man, just level with us. It's kind of interesting. Charles Krauthammer writes in the Washington Post today why he thinks raising the gas tax is a good idea. And, hard to come across anybody else on the right who is more respected than Charles Krauthammer. And he kind of, I'm not going to say he persuades me. I'm just going to say that he makes the case a little more coherently and wisely than anybody else I've seen. And it's a really important kind of little adjustment there. He says, yes, he wants to raise it $1 per gallon, which most people say, ah! However, he wants to reduce everyone's FICA tax by about the same amount. He says, most of the average American buys 12 gallons of gas a week. He wants to reduce FICA taxes by $12 a week, too. So for most people, he argues, it would end up being cost neutral. If you drive less, you end up making more money. And he says, so the purpose is not to raise money for the government. It's to reduce gasoline consumption. And his whole argument is that basically, look, the more fuel efficient we are, the stronger we are and the tougher it is for, the petro dictators with the Middle East and Russia and Venezuela and places like that. And his argument is the way we currently do it, by mandating car companies create a certain amount of fuel-efficient cars that consumers don't really want to buy, is the wrong way to do it. But if you make gas more expensive, consumers will choose it on their own part, and that'll end up getting us in the same place. And the good news is all the money stays here. I'm not quite convinced, but if you're going to do it, I think you got to do something on this vein, which is to say, well, gas prices are low, so now's our time to strike the American consumer. There's no way the Krauthammer proposal will ever go through. I think, government doesn't raise taxes in order to make them revenue neutral. It raises taxes because it wants more money. So as much as, it might be nice to get a FICA tax reduction or something like that, I don't buy into it, and I just kind of, I'm disappointed to see Republicans finally having complete control of Congress, and one of the first ideas they're discussing apparently is raising taxes.
Yeah, and it is a tax, and I'm surprised Krauthammer didn't talk about the thing you and I talked about so many times. If the gas tax goes up, it doesn't just go up when we buy fuel at the pump. It goes up for everything we buy, and then that's more money out of our pocket as well. So yeah. Does that still even out? I don't know.
No, it's a very fair question, and he doesn't really get into it, which is kind of uncharacteristic of Krauthammer. Maybe it's just a really cold day. The car doesn't always start the same in the morning. Maybe the Krauthammer mind is a little slow this morning, but we'll see.
On to the crazy martini now. And speaking of cold, when you think of cold campaigning, you think of Iowa and New Hampshire. So let's talk about Iowa 2016. But before you can get to the Iowa caucuses, Jim, yes, there will be a 2015 Ames Iowa State Fair straw poll, because we all know what a key factor it was in the nomination of Mitt Romney in 2007 and Michelle Bachmann in 2011. It turns out there were a lot of people trying to kill this thing, including the very popular governor, Terry Branstad, but other forces prevail here. It will go on. The candidates are not, however, required to participate. A lot of folks say it costs way too much money. It's way too early in the race for people to really get interested and have any sort of indication that this is the candidate that's likely to win the nomination. And, of course, it just makes the cycle start earlier and earlier. So we are stuck with the Ames straw poll one more time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think it should be seen as part of the presidential selection process so much as a kind of a quadrennial stimulus program enacted by the Republican Party for local barbecue joints. Because that, first of all, apparently, what was it? From last time around, Pawlenty, he spent $27,000 on barbecue at the straw poll. So that's really fantastic for Famous Dave's Barbecue out in Iowa. Whether it's good for the country is unclear. It didn't do much for Pawlenty, by the way, who did badly in the straw poll and left the race the next day. And it just kind of seems like this very artificial measuring stick. Maybe I should stop complaining, Greg, because I have been saying that with so many Republicans saying they're interested in running for president in 2016, I was joking that we needed a play-in round. kind of like the NCAA tournament.
Right.
It's time to stop giving automatic bids. Some of these guys have to earn their spot. And so maybe if you're going for the Iowa bracket, I don't really have enough money or resources to run a serious campaign. But I genuinely believe that if I shake enough hands in diners all across the entire state for 6 months and effectively live there, I can win the caucuses, and this will catapult me to first-tier status, and I'll do everything. But you notice it never really works out that way. You know, Santorum did this maneuver, and it didn't. You know, he did okay, but it, you know, it's very. You know, ultimately, you have to be able to have a big national organization. Huckabee did it same thing 4 years earlier. These guys who are generally socially conservative go out there, and they're able to do unbelievably intense retail politicking, going and meeting people, speaking to small groups. And on the one hand, this is this great, very romantic vision of how politics ought to be. But that's not how you win the nomination, you know, after Iowa. You get about 1 or 2 weeks in New Hampshire. You get 1 or 2 weeks in South Carolina. And then those states start coming fast and furious. And you just can't shake enough hands and enough diners to win the nomination in a nation of 317 people. You have to be able to run TV ads. You have to be able to, you know, have people volunteering, organizing, and knocking on doors and getting your people out there in every state in the union. I don't like how Iowa has become this illusory playing field. It's like preseason football that convinces guys that they have a really good chance of being president when all it means is that you're really good being a retail politician amongst the much smaller demographic of Republicans who participates in a caucus compared to a primary, which is what they have in most of the rest of the states. So, and if you don't like me saying this because you're in Iowa, get used to it. I'm going to be complaining about the Iowa caucuses for basically the entirety of 2015.
Well, two things. First of all, I've said all along that Iowa shouldn't get to host the first one until they can tell us who won the last one, because they still can't.
Ah, very good.
And secondly, this whole play-in thing has got me, I think has given me a good idea here. You and I could do play-by-play and color of these head-to-head matchups to get into, like, the Elite Eight. So we could say, welcome to Ames, Iowa. Along with Jim Garrity, I'm Greg Corumbus. Today, it's the 8 seed, Mike Huckabee, against the 9 seed, Ben Carson. Jim, what are the keys to this one?
We could do the Dick Vitale voice the entire time, Greggy. Yeah, it could be really good. Kind of, it's our belated tribute to Stuart Scott. Stay tuned, listeners. A really terrible idea has been born right before your ears. And we look forward to more NCAA March Madness-style coverage of the 2016 Republican presidential field.
Oh, that would make it so much more fun. Jim, talk to you on Monday. Have a great weekend.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend, and please join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.